Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I am a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a ticker tape parade, and I love film. As Alexander Hamilton once said, "The voice of the people has been said to be the voice of God, and however generally this maxim has been quoted and believed, it is not true to fact. The people are turbulent and changing. They seldom judge or determine right. Let's face it, the initial reviews for Vertigo were mixed at best, and that's a fucking masterpiece." Fair play, Alexander Hamilton. Always a very clever man. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Jameela Jamil, Sharon Stone, and even Brad Brambles. But this week, it's the turn of comedian Mary Beth Barone. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get 15 minutes extra chat and questions with Mary Beth, and a shocking secret, and a full video of the episode, all that and more over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. In TV news, if you've not yet seen it, you can now watch the whole of season 1 of Ted Lasso on the Apple TV Plus app. Watch it, you will laugh, you'll cry, you'll feel better. And if you are in America and now Portugal and Spain, the season finale of Soulmates is on AMC this Monday, and it's one of our favourites. It's written by me and Will Bridges, and it is expertly directed by Will Bridges himself. It features a frankly incredible performance by Betsy Brandt from Breaking Bad and JJ Field from Ford vs. Ferrari. Do not miss this one. It's a smasher. I sincerely hope everyone is doing okay. Lots of love to you all. Right, this podcast. So, I never met Mary Beth Barone before, but she was recommended to me by a friend of the podcast, superstar writer and actor and comedian Phoebe Walsh. Mary Beth is a brilliant stand-up actor, writer, and if for some reason you haven't seen any of her stuff, head over to her website, marybethbarone.com, where, oh, there's some good stuff. And I talk about these letters that she wrote. They're on there. If you want to have a look at that, I recommend it. We recorded this a couple of weeks ago on Zoom, and it was a seriously good time. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 120 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a writer, a comedian, a sketch comedian, one of Vulture's best comedians to ever look out for in your time on this earth, a Comedy Central superstar, a writer of letters to her ex, a person who is running a show I don't fully understand, but I read about and I do want to ask her about, and a legend to us all. Please welcome to the show the brilliant Mary Beth Barone.
Hi. Thank you for that thorough introduction.
You're welcome. Thank you for doing the podcast. I've done lots of research. I watched a lot of your stand-up. It's very, very good.
Thank you.
Well, there are two things I wanted to talk to you about quickly. One is, I get, and maybe you're bored of talking about this, and if you are, we don't have to talk about it, but you do this night called Drag His Ass, which is about a fuckboy treatment center.
Fuckboy treatment program.
Yeah. And are you bored of answering the question, what is a fuckboy?
I will never be bored of answering the question, what is a fuckboy? I made my own bed, so to speak, and now I have to sleep in it. So a fuckboy is a person who, it can be a man or it can be any gender. I always say a fuckboy can look like anything. A fuckboy is somebody who basically will say and do anything to get someone to sleep with them. And then after the fact, there's no accountability for what happens.
Right.
That's kind of the best. That's the most succinct way. There's obviously a lot of other behaviors that they exhibit. Fuckboys love to not commit to plans, or they like to make plans around their schedule. 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. They will cancel on you. They will gaslight you. They'll lead you on, all that stuff. And a lot of times they think that if they put a disclaimer that they're not a good person, like I'm a bad guy, that will kind of like relinquish them of responsibility, but it's not true.
So is it a good thing?
I guess depends who you ask. To me and everyone I've ever met, no.
That's very interesting. Yeah, that, I think that was what I imagined. I was just wanted to check it wasn't like a boy who's really good at fucking.
No. There's a different name for that.
What's that called?
It's so rare. A unicorn. No, actually, unicorns are bisexual women who are willing to sleep with couples. I just read a book about that. So I don't want to misuse the word unicorn. But I would say that guys who are good at sex, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I support you.
So the other question was, you on your website, I just want to talk about it briefly. You've written, I genuinely found this incredibly moving. I thought it was a great thing. You wrote 4 letters to your 4 big exes, right? And they're anonymous, except for the one when you were 12 or something.
I think I was 14, but yeah, basically 12.
Yeah, who you name and shame, although you're very nice about him, so it's fine. But it was a really lovely thing and actually quite moving. And I thought, I wondered what had brought you to that. And if your exes have read it, that's what I'd like to know.
So I have done a few ASMR videos and they've always been kind of like wacky and funny. So I was like, or, you know, the goal is to be funny. So I thought, okay, I'm going to write some letters to my ex-boyfriends and I'll read them as ASMR. Like that would be fun. So my intention was to make it funny. But then when I sat down to write them, I just like started crying and I was like, maybe I shouldn't read these as ASMR because I think I'll get a bit emotional. So I decided I still wanted to like do it as an exercise. And I thought maybe I'll just write them and I won't publish them. But then I just ended up kind of liking how it turned out. So I put it on my website and I got a lot of nice feedback. One, the 2 ex-boyfriends, so the first 2, the gay one who I'm very close with, really enjoyed it. And then my high school boyfriend also reached out and was just really sweet about it. You know, the 2 more adult relationships I didn't hear from, but they are very good friends with my brothers. So I've seen them, you know, since we broke up and we have a fine relationship, I would say, but I don't know if they read them. I hope they did. I was honest and you know, I meant everything that I said. So
they felt very genuine and not, they felt like they were written with love and with perspective. And I wondered if they had changed anything, having written them, whether it made you feel differently about everything, whether you let go of stuff, if you were holding on to stuff, anything like that.
Yeah, I think I did. Like it's been weird to have so much time, I think, in quarantine to just reflect on your past and decisions and your life. And I definitely think I've worked through a lot of the stuff that I was holding on to, which feels nice. And that's why it feels good to kind of like put it down on paper. And I do think a lot of times like closure is maybe a construct. Like, I don't know if we ever truly get closure from things, but as much as I can process all of those things, I think I have, which feels good.
That's brilliant. Genuinely, I found it really moving.
Thanks.
Oh, shit. Mary Beth Bryan. Nuts.
What happened?
I forgot to tell you something.
What?
Fuck, I should have said it. I should have said it when we started. But we're like, you know, I should have, do you know what? I even should have said it when we were doing the admin and we were sorting out all this stuff. But I just, God.
What is it?
You would be amazed how often I forget, but I'm just going to have to say it. I'll say it. You seem strong enough to handle this. You've died. You're dead. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, that's a lot to hear on air.
Yeah, and live. How did you die?
Well, you know, I'm just hearing about this.
Yeah.
But I can imagine I died because my lover, who poisons me with mushrooms every once in a while to get closer to me, got the dosage wrong.
What an idiot.
And it's like, we've talked about this because we knew, you know, we had to be careful. But I guess sometimes with these things, accidents happen.
How many times had he previously poisoned you with the right amount?
I would say a handful.
Right.
It's kind of blurry at this point, but between one and five.
Listen, I don't want to ask, as in I don't want to, I'm not suggesting anything, but are you sure it was an accident?
I am sure.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I am confident that it was an accident because he would have nothing to gain from killing me.
Yeah. Okay.
But well, so I hope he's well if he's listening.
I'm sure he is. I hope he's waiting for a letter.
He's definitely waiting for a letter. And I would say, you know, don't blame yourself because we both knew the risks.
Yeah. Yeah. When you enter into that sort of agreement, these are the possible consequences. And here we are. Do you worry about death?
No, because I felt like, you know, he was always going to just take care, like nurse me back to health, as they say.
I guess I meant, do you worry about death in a grander
sense? Oh, in a larger sense, not in the situation of being poisoned consistently.
No, you seem pretty cool about.
Yeah, I guess I don't really worry about, well, no, that's not true. When I was out and about in New York all the time, I was always pretty sure I was going to get shot at some point just because like so many people and, you know, there's crazies everywhere or pushed onto subway tracks or something like that. But now I would say being at my parents' house, I feel pretty safe.
Right.
You know, pre-mortem, when I was living there, I didn't think about it as much.
But you do live in New York normally?
Yes.
So most of your time is spent thinking about being shot and thrown onto subway tracks?
Yeah, and with, you know, there's less people out these days, so it's not, and I don't take the subway anymore because of the, you know, the virus. So I would say I was feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a shock.
You could, I suppose you could still get hit by a cab or something.
That's true. And I do worry about that. I used to jaywalk a lot more, but in my, as a grown, I do less of that. I used to ride city bike all the time as well. But then I thought I could just see my life flash before my eyes. And I thought, this isn't how I want to go.
No.
I want it to be more romantic. Yeah, so I guess overall, I'm happy with the outcome.
It worked out. Do you think there's an afterlife?
I do because I'm here right now.
Correct.
On this podcast. So I'm happy to see that podcasts have made it as a medium in the afterlife. I'm wondering if TV shows, movies, and things like that have fared similarly.
Well, I do actually have the answers.
Great.
On that. But I'd just like to check arriving here and realizing heaven is a podcast.
Heaven is a motherfucking podcast.
Did you have a different opinion of what it would be before this moment? Did you have a different wish?
It's hard because I feel like I grew up Catholic and I was always thinking like heaven, you know, that sounds kind of cool, whatever that is. And then I went to college and I stopped believing in God. But now I feel like maybe something happens to our souls. I hope so. Otherwise, this will be, you know, life will have been, what do we gain from it? If there's nothing after. But I guess my logical brain says probably not, but we just don't know. There's so much of space we haven't explored. Maybe there's a galaxy where everyone's souls go and we all just kind of vibe and hang out.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
I like that idea. But this is just, we're just like spaceships for ourselves. And when these explode, we go teleport.
Like stars that die. I don't know. There's got to be some kind of analogy there because you can still see them for a long time after. Yes. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Oh, well. That's not what your website said. you were kind of right. Listen, there is a heaven. You were right all along at Catholic school, but it probably wasn't quite what they said in the Bible because it is also a podcast. And there's no TV shows. TV's dead. Yeah. Okay. But there are movies every night.
Oh, fantastic.
So yes, I think it's better.
It's something to look forward to. It's nice because movies, you know, beginning, middle, and an end. Mm. Even if it's like a trilogy or something, you're always kind of, you're getting the story in one sitting, which you don't really get from TV.
No. It's very frustrating when people tell you to watch a TV show and it's got seven seasons and you're like, well, I ain't got that. I mean,
who has that kind of time?
Who has that kind of time? Yes, we're in a pandemic. Yes, we're all locked up. But who has that kind of time anyway?
Yes, I have the time. But like, who's going to do that? Who's going to sit there and watch them? I don't know.
Who's got the time? And by who, I mean us, of course. But
I mean, we definitely do. But I prefer just a good movie.
Yeah. Well,
that's just me.
You've come to the right heaven. Now, what everyone in this heaven, they want to know about your life. They're interested in you, but they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing?
Okay, so this answer is a two-parter for me, because I'm so sure that like Little Mermaid was probably one of the first films I saw. I was very into the Disney VHS yes. kind of collection. Those were movies I could always go back to. But I think the first film I remember seeing is a movie called It Takes Two with Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Oh my God. I know that film. Tell me about it.
The movie It Takes Two with Mary-Kate and Ashley is, the way I always describe it is, it's the Parent Trap without the science. So they are identical strangers, one very rich with a widowed father, one an orphan with a social worker who is like heart of gold, Kirstie Alley. It's Kirstie Alley, Steve Guttenberg. And so they switch places to get their parents, well, parents together. And the movie had such an impact on me as a child. My parents got it for me. So I used to freak out whenever my parents would like leave us with a babysitter, because I just wanted to hang out with my mom. So my mom got it for me one evening as a bribe, because she was going to dinner and she said, well, here's a gift for you. And it was the VHS of It Takes Two. So I remember that vividly.
That's amazing. Do you have siblings?
I have five siblings.
What?
I'm survived by five siblings.
Holy shit. Where did...
Yeah.
What number are you?
I'm the youngest.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So it's a lot.
When you say your ex-boyfriends are friends of your brother, do you mean different brothers or the same brother?
Yes.
Different brothers.
Yeah.
How many boys and girls in this family?
It's three boys, three girls.
What?
Kind of a classic Brady Bunch situation.
Oh my God.
Except all from the same parents.
I want to see the sitcom of your life. Why don't you have a reality TV show? And do you? Maybe you do.
I don't. What I think would be funny is if I did a reality TV show, but none of my family signed releases. So we had to blur all their faces in every episode.
That is a great idea.
I want to pitch that. But yeah, my family, they're great. They're just like, you know, none of them wanted to live such public lives. Mm. Not that mine's even that public, but it's only, hopefully it will get worse. We pray. So they're not looking to be on TV, but I have suckered them into being in a few of my projects, which has been nice, because they're all different ages.
Yeah.
And I have nieces and nephews, so sometimes they come in handy.
Oh my God. What's the age difference between you and the oldest, may I ask?
My oldest brother's 40, so it's like 11 years ish.
Mind blowing.
It's crazy. But you'd have to imagine that choosing a movie was very difficult for my family because of the age range.
I mean, Christmas is a nightmare. You can't go to Disney World, can you? Can't go to Disney World with 60. Can you?
We did. My parents are just, they went all the way off. They had six kids and then they were like, well, we'll just do everything that we would have done with three kids.
Incredible.
So that worked out well for me.
Well, that's a great first film. And Little Mermaid is, you know, magnificent. But
it's
sure,
so good.
In hindsight, slightly problematic storyline.
That's what they say. I mean, yeah. I used to have a joke about how I relate to Ariel in a lot of ways, because she has two gay best friends, the bird and the fish. And she also, there was a third, oh, she's a princess, but she's still unhappy. And then also she meets a guy, immediately falls in love, and then is ready to abandon her entire family to be with him. I'm not like that anymore, but like, you know. Maybe that movie was impactful. I don't know.
That's interesting. What is the film that scared you the most?
So one night, one fateful evening, in my kitchen, the movie Chucky was playing. Mm-hmm. And I was a kid. I had many dolls. And I couldn't look away. So as a result of that, I made my mom put all my dolls in a black garbage bag and put them in the basement because I was scared that they were going to come alive and kill me.
Did she set fire to the dolls?
No, she did not set fire. Well, maybe she did, but I wasn't part of that. If so,
you never got them back. You never came back to the dolls.
I don't think so. Like it was, I mean, maybe I went down and got a couple of them, the ones that I really trusted, but no, mostly I was just like, this is it. This is the end.
Oh my God.
Of me and my dolls.
Do you like being scared?
I used to not like being scared. And now I do enjoy horror movies, but it's just because like, they're all so far-fetched. It's like, it doesn't really scare. I don't know. Like, I like the ones that are more high concept, I would say. I really enjoyed Midsommar and Hereditary. Those stick out as like horror movies I've seen recently that I really enjoyed. But I would say like maybe like The Purge and stuff, those ones I'm not obsessed with.
That's fair. What about crying? What's the film that made you cry the most?
So this one was tough because I know that there's been so many, but I think recently one that stuck out to me was Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
Which is probably a cop out, but like I did cry at the end when the dad gave the speech. I thought that was very moving. So that's what sticks out to me.
Do you feel like a boy staring into a fire?
Sometimes, yeah. Mm. Right now, yes. Specifically, but I'm keeping it together for the good of the podcast.
You're doing so well. Yes, that film. People love that film. They really love
it. People do. And some people think that movie's problematic.
Yes. I'm one of those people.
Okay. Is it the age difference or what was?
Just that. Just that doesn't seem to be an issue for anyone. I'm sort of like, what's going on?
It was the 90s, right? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, obviously it's problematic. But I think as someone who, as I've mentioned now several times, has older brothers, I just remember what it was like to be that the kid that like has a crush on the like older person that's always around. And I think for me, it was almost like wish fulfillment of like, what would have happened if I did get to hook up with one of them, even though, you know, obviously if you haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, see it. Like, spoiler, they don't end up together. I still think it was very relatable to me. So that's why I'll defend it.
Okay. Listen, it is beloved. I am in a very small minority of thinking, isn't he a bit old? And why are the parents so cool with this? But that's maybe because...
Because love is love.
Because love is love, exactly. Exactly.
I thought you were going to say love is love.
Yeah. Do you cry in the real world?
You know, I didn't cry for probably like 2 years, you know, didn't have a big cry. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, something about this pandemic got me crying all the time. All the time I'm crying.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you feel like better for it? Do you feel like it's a good thing?
No. My therapist told me I'm more in touch with my emotions, like I'm less detached from them. And I was like, well, could we go back to the way it was before? Because I think that that worked. That was working.
Yeah, I was much more productive when I wasn't crying all the time. Yeah, I get that. What is the film that people don't like? It's critically not acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally.
I'll say it. I have a few. So the movie Baywatch with The Rock.
Go on.
I had no expectations watching that movie. Mm-hmm. I've now seen it probably 5 times. I think it is so funny, and just like there's action, there's comedy, there's bikinis, there's ripped dudes, Zac Efron. It's just like, I'm here for it, you know? And I think if we had more movies like that, maybe we like people would just be happier. I don't think it's very highly regarded, but as someone who, you know, I watch comedies with a critical eye, and I just thought that this one really delivered. So that is a movie I recommended to people, and they look at me like I am insane. But I'll stand by it.
Interesting answer.
It's nonstop fun for the whole family.
Wow.
And so that one's going to be very high on the list for me. Then I would say the movie Mother.
Oh, I love the movie Mother.
Everyone hates Mother. And I can't express how much I enjoyed it. Like, I don't think it was for the mainstream. And I don't mean to sound like a snobby, like movie. I'm not like a movie guy, you know, like where I'm like talking about movies no one's ever heard of all the time. But I just thought Mother was like such an insular world that was like so well done. And like, I don't know, I just really liked it.
I love that film. It's a nightmare. It's like a horrific nightmare for 2 hours. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And I also was impressed with how every minute it gets madder. And you're like, it can't get much madder, can it? And then,
the baby,
last half hour, whoa.
Just bananas. Mm. I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer in that movie is so creepy and psycho. Like, I don't know. I just thought it was, great. And I felt sorry that I think Jennifer Lawrence, well, obviously dating the director, you know, and being the star,
yeah,
probably felt like she really had to like go to bat for the film. But I just think it wasn't like marketed well for what it was.
The thing that I thought was really interesting about Mother is the whole film is like an allegory. You can read it however you want, but something must have happened with the marketing people and whoever owns the film, because like the day before it came out, Darren Aronofsky, instead of like David Lynch, whenever he does interviews, says, I can't say what it's about. It's up to you. Darren Aronofsky came out and said, it's about Mother Earth. It's about Mother Earth. It's a metaphor for Mother Earth. He's Adam. She's Eve. And I was like, oh, I don't think you wanted to do that, but you've been told.
You know, as a filmmaker, if I watched a trailer for something I'd like poured my heart and soul into and it was just portraying it completely wrong, I think I would probably do the same thing, because they just were not setting him up for success, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I feel that way about a lot of movies these days. The trailers are just, I mean, I could talk about that for an hour. I just think, I don't know, they need to go back to the way trailers used to be, which is that it doesn't actually show the entire movie.
Yeah. It's horrific. I also could talk about this for now, but I find it, I don't watch trailers anymore. I try to avoid them because they just tell you everything, including the final scene, usually.
I know. It's insane. with comedies, it's so always like, oof, I just hurts my heart, because you know that they're picking the funniest lines from the movie for the trailer. And then I'm thinking, well, if that's the funniest part, I have no incentive to watch this ever. But go see Baywatch, rent Baywatch, pay $3 or whatever it is.
Baywatch is a great show.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What film did you used to love? You loved it. Oh, you loved it. And then you've watched it again recently and you've gone, oh, no, I don't love it anymore.
I had a hard time with this one because obviously I have always had impeccable taste in movies. But the movie that I think I can still enjoy because I have problematic opinions and I can see it for what it is the movie My Best Friend's Wedding.
Right.
And if you haven't seen My Best Friend's Wedding, essentially it's about Julia Roberts' character is in love with this guy, but she has like vulnerability issues. She never really opens up to him about it. And then he gets engaged to Cameron Diaz. And then she does everything she can basically to ruin the wedding and get the guy for herself, who's Dermot Mulroney. Yeah. But anyway, it's just like extremely problematic and shows women as being like pretty much psychopaths. And so I think it's not good for women, but it is good for me as an entertaining piece.
Is it not? It's interesting you say that. Is it not good for women? Isn't it good to show women as all sorts? Because she also doesn't succeed at the end. And Cameron Diaz is sort of, everyone's judging everyone. And in the end, everyone's all right. And love is love.
Yeah. In the end, love is love. And I think that's what most movies are here to teach us. But I still think it's just like, it's just not a good look. I think there were things they could have not done. When she sends the email from her Cameron Diaz's dad's email, even though it was an accident, it's like, okay, now you've gone too far.
Mm.
She shouldn't have written the email from his email address. It's insane.
Yeah.
And then also to leave it as a draft. I don't know the whole thing, but Vincenzo from It Takes Two is the dad in that. So it's always good to see a familiar face.
I think I'm still slightly, I know we've moved on from it, but I haven't, that It Takes Two, they're not twin sisters in it.
They're not.
They're not related. And that's not a reveal later on. They find out they're related. They just go, you look like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I didn't mention this before, but I know the entire movie from start to finish, the lines, and I performed it as a one woman show last year.
Oh my God. I'd love to see that.
And I was going to do it every year. And then COVID came and said, forget that.
No more It Takes Two live.
They're not performing live again for a long time.
Okay.
But yeah.
What you could do for us is, could you do the dialogue of the scene where they realize they look the same?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me get in the mindset. Well, first of all, they're both running. And the song that's playing is the Hippie Hippie Shake. And then they obviously bump into each other and they're like, huh? Whoa. Do you see what I see? I don't know what you see, but what I see is me. I see me too. And then they kind of go from there. Thank you.
I would love to see that whole thing.
It's very hard to play twins as one person, but I'm not the first one to do it. So I felt like I had some good inspiration to pull from.
How old were they in the story of It Takes Two?
Maybe like 9.
It's really good writing. I see me. I see me too. And I bet on paper it was me T-W-O.
I'm sure they had puns written into the script.
That's really good writing.
And then she's like, you live at the Calloway house and you're that girl from camp. They thought I was you. And then they meet and it's very sweet.
What's the last line?
I believe the last line of the movie is they're sitting on the church steps. It's not this, but I do think this comes up in the last scene. It's got to be that can't eat, can't sleep, reach for the stars, over the fence, World Series kind of thing. You know what I think that it is actually the last line is they're kissing and she's like, it's a high fly ball, which is like relates back to the whole analogy of love.
Wow. Love is a high fly ball. What film, thank you for that, by the way. What film means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had seeing the film will always make it special to you.
Okay, so originally I was going to say The Mask, because when we were watching The Mask, we got the call that my grandma died, but I figured maybe that's too morose. So I'm going to say How to Be Single, which is another movie that everyone hates that I love. But when I saw How to Be Single, I had kind of already decided I wanted to break up with my boyfriend. So I decided I wanted to break up with my boyfriend, and then I saw that movie and I was like, okay, I'm doing it. And then the next weekend, I did it, Valentine's Day.
Wow. What did you say?
I said, I just saw a movie called How to Be Single, and I think we're done. No, I was like really sad. And I was like, I'm sorry to do this today when you just got back from vacation. And also, it's Valentine's Day, but I think we should break up.
Here's a ticket to see How to Be Single.
Take this. I insist.
This will help. If you're struggling, this will help. It certainly helped me to get here.
Yeah.
God, I wonder when they made that, if they knew it would be genuinely instructional.
You know what? I don't know. Maybe they just wanted a cheeky name for it. But to me, I felt like this movie's speaking to me right now.
It is quite good, that film, isn't it? It's got a nice bit. I watched it on a plane, so, you know, my judgment may have been impaired. But
always.
It's got a nice bit where it counts beers in the room.
Yes, yes. That's a great scene. And also, I just felt like I like Rebel Wilson. I think she's funny. Sue me. But I do. And I think it had like a couple of false endings, which I always find interesting. But I do think the way it closed the loop for me just felt very nice and uplifting almost.
Just thinking back to the letter you write to your ex, you don't say, P.S. Did you see How to Be Single yet?
And I'm just going to write this down quickly because I'm going to add that when we're done on here.
What is the film you most relate to?
Josie and the Pussycats.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to hold my hands up and say I've never seen Josie and the Pussycats, but I'm very aware that I keep reading articles saying how it's the greatest film ever in a lost gem. So please talk to me.
So it's about Josie and the Pussycats, and they're a rock group, like a girl band. And, you know, I'm not in a girl band, but when I was like 14, when I saw that movie for the first time, I was like, this is me. Like, I can't even describe it. You have to see it. It's Tara Reid, Rachel Lee Cook, and Rosario Dawson. Wow. But Alan Cumming is also in it, as is Parker Posey. And it's just like the way they made the movie. It gets, I don't think, a lot of respect, or it didn't, at least when it came out. I remember, I think my brothers kind of rolled their eyes at it, but it's such a smart comedy. Yeah, they just like wore lots of lip gloss and the coolest clothes. And like, I don't know, something about that movie, I just thought like, I can relate to this, even though I wasn't a pop star or anything. But
and is Josie the Pussycat, was it based on a cartoon?
It's based on a comic book. Right. And so there is a bit of like action in it. I don't want to spoil anything because it's so good. And I don't know if it's that easy to find these days, but it's worth renting if you have the money.
Are you relating to Josie or the Pussycats?
I think I'm relating to it all.
All of it, the whole thing.
Because it's very like girl power, and that was instilled in me by the Spice Girls mm-hmm. at a young age.
Me too.
And this movie felt like it really appealed to the Spice Girl generation.
Right. Okay. I'm going to have to watch that and Baywatch. What a day.
I'm giving you some great recommendations now.
Mary Beth Rome, we've not met for long, but I do have to ask you these questions. What is the film you found sexiest?
Atonement, hands down.
So please go on.
Atonement has one of the best sex scenes I've ever witnessed between Keira Knightley and James McAvoy.
Up against the library.
Hmm. Now, as a virgin watching that movie thinking that's what love is love. Mm-hmm. I just thought this is glamour. It's, you know, World War II era storytelling, which I'm always a fan of. And I just thought it was wonderful. Now, when I watch the movie, I stop it at the library scene. I don't want to see what else happens. I just want to believe that they end up together.
You stop it after the library scene?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right
you
after.
You watch the whole of the library scene.
Basically, what I'm saying is that I just watch the library scene. But it's a great movie, and it is tragic and heartbreaking. I tried to read the book this quarantine, but I just couldn't get through it.
Okay.
The movie's better. Controversial take.
Sorry, Ian McEwan, you tried. There's a subcategory to this question, Mary Beth. Brian. The question is troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. What film did you find arousing that you thought perhaps you shouldn't have?
The movie Aladdin.
The remake or the original?
Oh, no, the original. I always got a weird feeling between my legs when I would watch it, and the part where Jasmine's in the red outfit mm-hmm. and Jafar is being... like Jafar, and she's kind of having to seduce him a little bit. Mm-hmm. I just always thought that was really sexy. And that's probably when I should have realized that I'm attracted to women, but it did take me probably like a good two more decades to figure that out.
So. Really? What was the thing that clinched it two decades later?
I met a girl I wanted to date, and that was kind of...
And she wasn't animated.
She was not animated. I said, okay, well, this is translating new to real life now. So maybe I need to take some time to figure this out.
Wow. That's exciting.
Was it as good as I imagined when I was seeing Jasmine in the red outfit? Yes.
Okay. Great. Great.
Yeah.
Was it, well, if I may, if it was two decades later, then I assume that's quite a while. Was it scary in the beginning, or was it like, did it all just happen?
I had some liquid courage, so okay. That really took the edge off. And then, it, you know, you just get more comfortable. It gets easier. Not easy, but like, you know, you just don't really think about it. You don't think about the differences. You're just like, oh, that's a person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my experience.
Love is a high fly ball.
Love is love. God, I can't say it enough.
What film, objectively, is the greatest film of all time?
That's going to be the Jack Nicholson film, Chinatown.
Do you know what? You'll be surprised. That has not come up before. And yet...
And that makes me think, like, who the hell are you having on this podcast?
Well, all the idiots I have on this podcast say The Godfather, and it drives me fucking mad.
I couldn't even get through that movie. It was just boring, but...
Now, why Chinatown?
Chinatown is just... It's just so well done. Young Jack Nicholson is so hot. Faye Dunaway is so great in it. And the acting, the writing, the plot, all of it. It was a period piece done at a time when, like, it just, there it wasn't that, like, high-tech filmmaking, but it was just, like, I don't know. It has everything for me.
Mm.
And there's a love story, and it's, like, tragic. And I don't want to spoil it, but the whole, like, mother-sister thing that is referenced in modern culture sometimes comes from that movie.
What's the mother-sister thing that's referenced in cultural time?
Well, I saw it referenced in Gilmore Girls, and I thought, there's not going to be a lot of people watching this who know what that is. But do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, we can put, if you haven't seen Chinatown, you can skip forward 5 minutes.
So basically, it's daughter-sister. So Faye Dunaway gets raped by her dad, mm-hmm. and they have a kid who's, like, special needs, basically. Mm-hmm. And so then... that's part of, like, the mystery that unfolds. But basically, it's about the Los Angeles water supply. I mean, that's what, like, the plot is. But then it becomes this, like, whole other, like, family drama. And then he's, like, slapping her, and she's like, she's my daughter, she's my sister, because she's both.
Right.
Which is disgusting and sad. But
yeah, and that film is also, like, well, we did talk very briefly before this started about, you know, the world and the politics and all of that stuff. But also, Chinatown is about everyone is running, everything is really bad, isn't it?
Very corrupt.
And there's not much you can do about it. It's quite a hopeless film.
Yeah.
It's just Chinatown, baby, or whatever he says. What's the last line?
I think it is like, that's China. I think it literally is, that's Chinatown.
Mm.
So if you haven't
Forget about it, Jake.
It's Chinatown,
it's Chinatown,
baby. And then all of a sudden he has a New York accent, even though he's in Los Angeles. Makes no sense, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is a revered classic film that I haven't heard talked about in ages. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. What film could you or have you watched the most over and over again?
So for a long time, it was It Takes Two.
Mm.
But now, as an adult, it's the movie Interstellar.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You've watched that on repeat.
I've watched that movie so many times. Basically, I watched it every day for 3 months a few years ago. And then I said, I should start going to therapy. And then I did. And my life was changed forever.
Yeah. Was this something to do with your dad?
No, it was just like...
space travel.
I'm obsessed with movies about space,
mm-hmm.
even though I have my own theories about space. But...
what are your own theories about space?
The more I learn about space, the more it seems fake to me. But... it's just like, I think it's fake.
What do you mean? I think, fascinated.
Part of me thinks we're in a simulation, and that maybe space was just like a creative thing that they came up with. They, the people running things, mm-hmm. just to give us like all these unanswered questions, and like planets are crazy. There's things we know about the planets that I don't understand how we know. And so I have a lot of questions that I'll never get answered.
Like, what do we know about planets you don't understand how we know?
Like, they say that if you put Saturn in a big bucket, it would float. And I just don't understand how they could possibly know that.
That's fair. I don't remember. It's the first time I've heard that.
It's because they say it's less dense than water, but I just don't understand how they even know that. Because, like, have we been able to send probes to every planet to, like, gather, like, samples? And I don't know, it just seems crazy that there's so much space we just don't know. And then also, like, us being the only intelligent life potentially, it's something that it doesn't sit right with me, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Have you seen Watchmen?
I have.
So you know the bit of him catapulting
Watchmen. Oh,
Siri is a big fan.
Siri had something to say.
Siri's into Watchmen. That, like, space is just this thing, and if you get far enough, you cross out of it and go to the real world or whatever.
See, I haven't seen it in ages, but that sounds great. I that's something I'd be interested in.
But then the question is, are the people who've been to space, like, in on it? Are they, you know, Neil Armstrong, if he's talking about it, he's like going, yeah, it was amazing, the moon, wink, wink.
Well, that's the thing that's weird. I do believe in the moon landing, so I don't
know. The moon's real, and that's where it stops.
I just have a lot of conflicting views because I'm a Gemini. So it's like, this is just, I am who I am.
I'm not judging you. I'm sort of curious. I agree. When did they get a bucket big enough to put around Saturn and fill it with water? And,
yeah.
That totally makes sense to me.
There's other things. Also, there's so much that's just theoretical about all of it that I just question a lot of the things that we know are based on math, which is like sort of made up if you really think about it.
And time.
Yeah. And that's something Christopher Nolan loves to kind of play around with, is time. And people don't like Interstellar either because they say it makes no sense. But I say, watch it 100+ times. It'll start to make sense.
It's quite a heavy film, though, to watch on the reg.
Yeah, it is. And it's extremely long as well. But I just find that it's, I mean, I hate to keep bringing this up, but the point of that movie is that love is love.
Yeah, love is love.
And he pretty much says that. He's very on the nose about it, because Anne Hathaway has to convince the crew, Matthew McConaughey and a gentleman whose name I don't remember, that she wants to go to the planet where the astronaut that she's in love with is trying to settle and, you know, start humanity again. And then she kind of has to make the point that, like, love serves no evolutionary function because we love things that have died. So, like, riddle me that, Matthew McConaughey. And he's like, well, I still think we should go to Matt Damon's planet. And then he turns out to be evil. So in the end, we should just, like, listen to love, I think.
Yeah. Have you seen Tenet?
I have seen Tenet.
Did you have feelings about it?
You know, from a filmmaking perspective, I thought this is incredible. What a feat. I don't know how someone could write that script or read that script, but I didn't think it had the tenets of a Christopher Nolan movie that I would be able to watch again and again.
Thank you. We don't like to be too negative on this show. So
sure.
But what's the worst film you ever saw?
This was recently. And I don't think you've probably even heard of it, but it's a movie called Nobody's Fool.
Is that with Paul Newman? Not that one.
No, it's with Tiffany Haddish. It's a Tyler Perry movie.
Oh, okay.
The plot was just absolutely absurd. It had so many times where I thought it was over, but it wasn't. Hoped it was over. And the writing was terrible. There was no chemistry between any of the actors. It just really fell flat for me on every level.
Okay, I'll look out for it.
Please do.
Tyler Perry, though. One man machine. One man film industry.
He needs to take some time to recharge the batteries, I think. It's doing too much.
You're working too hard, Tyler.
And I can say that because he's never going to hire me to write on any of his shows, because he writes them all himself.
Does he?
That's what he'd lead you to believe. There was a viral tweet where he showed all the various scripts he'd written in a year. If you've not seen that video, it's a quickie and it is funny.
How many has he written in a year?
I mean, there were just stacks and stacks of scripts. Wow. Multiple seasons of multiple shows.
Wow. That's fascinating. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
So there's two classics in my family that kind of appealed to all ages. One of them is Tommy Boy, starring Chris Farley and David Spade.
Lovely film.
And the other is Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
Lovely film. Both lovely films.
Fantastic. We had them on VHS, and we had a van for when we would go on family trips, and we had a TV in there very early in the technology. It was not like built into the car. Mm-hmm. It was like a TV with a shelf and a VHS player, and we would watch those just over and over and over again.
Has your whole family come to see you do stand up?
Yes. Never all at the same time. No, yeah, I don't think all at the same time, just because everyone's schedules, but they have seen me. They've all seen me at various points.
Do you love them all equally?
No, that would be crazy.
Love is love.
I'm not their mother. I don't have to love them all equally.
Is your top three the nearest three, or are they really sporadic?
It changes.
Okay.
The rankings, there's a power ranking. I have it on a notes app in my phone, and it changes depending on who's nice to me.
And I'm just so fascinated by Six Kids. If I can ask, and you can say no, it's none of my business, but I'm just fascinated. How often do you speak to all of them?
We talk like all day, every day, because we have group chats.
Love it. Absolutely love that. Genuinely want the reality TV show. I think it's very selfish that they don't want to have public life.
Look, I'm going to tell them you said that because I think it'd be fucking fun.
Yeah, for sure. Mary Beth Bright, you've been wonderful and I appreciate you. However, when your lover and you had agreed on this relationship of poisonous mushrooms, where you were quite open about the risks, you knew the risks, you both knew the risk, but you'd done it 1 to 5 times successfully, where he'd cooked you a mushroom omelette, let's say, and you'd got ill, really ill, and he'd have to nurse you back to health, and it'd been very loving. And then he said, you haven't been like connecting much. You'd been busy. He'd been busy. You'd been falling apart. He goes, shall I make dinner tonight? And you go, yeah, okay. And he says, I've got mushrooms. And you're like, oh, cool. And he makes you a mushroom pie.
Yep.
Filled.
My favorite.
Filled with mushrooms. And you, as he's cooking it, you say, not that I don't trust you, but is that a lot of mushrooms? And he goes, it's mushroom pie, babe. And he calls you babe. And you're like, okay. And you're thinking to yourself, he doesn't normally call me babe. That was weird. But he goes, it's mushroom pie. Got to have mushrooms. And you're like, okay. Well, shall I lay the table? Yeah, sure. So you lay the table. Oven comes out. You start eating the pie. You say, are you going to have any? He goes, no, of course not.
And which go, I thought was weird.
Yeah, of course. Well, one of us has got to nurse the other one back to health. And he goes, yeah. He goes, yeah, nurse you back to health. Sure. And then suddenly you start, you're like, what's that? And he's going, oh, is something stuck in your throat? And you go, no, I think, I feel like maybe I ate one too many mushrooms. And he goes, you ate 20 too many mushrooms. And at that point, you collapse to the floor, dead. A month passes. Phoebe says to me, Phoebe walks, she says, can you check on Mary Beth Brown? I haven't heard from her in a while. I go, yeah, sure, I'm in New York. I'll go to your place. No answer. Kick down the door. And there you are, left where you had died.
Yeah.
Rotted by the kitchen table, covered in rats. Mushrooms are growing out of you. You've become a sort of mushroom patch. I've brought a coffin for you, but I brought a coffin the size of you. I wasn't expecting all this extra stuff, all these rats and mushroom hills.
Yeah.
So I have to chop you up. I use the knife your boyfriend had used to make the pie.
Yeah.
Chop you up. Is he here? No, he's not here and he's taking all your stuff. Chop you up. I chop you up. Put you in the coffin. But there was more of you than I was expecting. So it's absolutely stuffed in there, right?
Full to the brim.
Full to the brim. There's only really enough room in that coffin for one DVD that I could slip into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show everyone when you get to heaven and it's your movie night? Mary Beth Barone.
I'm bringing Mean Girls.
Ding! Clawed it back. They're going to love you.
Yeah, I hope they enjoy it. It's such a good movie. And Lindsay Lohan in her prime. We love seeing Lizzie Kaplan launch the career of Rachel McAdams. I think people really enjoy it. And it appeals to all ages, all genders, mm-hmm. and it's just fun.
It's a really good film. Mary Beth Barone, thank you so much for doing this. You've been brilliant. Is there anything that you would like to tell anyone to look out for or to listen to or to read?
Well, I would tell them to listen to this podcast, but if they've already gotten to this point, yeah. I'm assuming they did, unless they fast-forwarded to the end. So listen to this podcast.
Go back to the beginning, listen to it properly.
Listen to it properly. Don't listen to it on 2x, 2x or whatever, because I'll sound crazy. I would say you can follow me on social media at Mary Beth Barone. You know, there's lots of things that I like to post online. So follow me online. And someday I'll perform live again, and you can find out more about that on my Instagram.
And go to our website, marybethbarone.com, to read the letters.
To read my letters.
Well worth, and also to check if she did put P.S. Have you seen How to Be Single?
Have you seen How to Be Single? So I wrote it down.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your time. Have a lovely death and good night.
Thank you.
So that was episode 120. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Mary Beth. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's very nice to read. I do read them and quite often they make me cry. And if you're into that sort of thing, you should do it. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much to Mary Beth Barone for doing the show. Thanks to Phoebe for sorting it out. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lytham for the photography. Come join me next week. Oh, you know who's on next week? Am I going to say it? All right. Next week, I've got an incredible episode with Mr. Patton Oswalt. That's right. Come back next week for that one. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week, and please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.